expecting approbation. It was a smile such as moved audiences nightly in London, and which had made the fortunes of photographers. "It happened," she went on carefully, "to a friend of mine." Everyone made encouraging but slightly hypocritical noises. Colonel Bantry, Mrs. Bantry, Sir Henry Clithering, Dr. Lloyd, and old Miss Marple were one and all convinced that Jane's friend was Jane herself. She would have been quite incapable of remembering or taking an interest in anything affecting anyone else. "My friend," went on Jane, "I won't mention her name, was an actress, a very well-known actress." No one expressed surprise. Sir Henry Clithering thought to himself, "Now I wonder how many sentences it'll be before she forgets to keep up the fiction and says I instead of she. "My friend was on tour in the provinces. This was a year or two ago. I suppose I better not give the name of the place. It was a riverside town, not very far from London. I'll call it..." She paused, her brows perplexed in thought. The invention of even a simple name appeared to be too much for her. Sir Henry came to the rescue. "Shall we call it Riverbury?" he suggested gravely. "Oh, yes, that would do splendidly. Riverbury, I'll remember that. Well, as I say, my friend was at Riverbury with her company, and a very curious thing happened." She puckered her brows again. "It's very difficult," she said plaintively, "to say just what you want. One gets things mixed up and tells the wrong thing first." "You're doing it beautifully," said Dr. Lloyd encouragingly. "Go on." "Well, this curious thing happened. My friend was sent forward to the police station, and she went. It seemed there had been a burglary at a riverside bungalow, and they'd arrested a young man, and he told a very odd story, and so they sent for her. She'd never been to a police station before, but they were very nice to her. Very nice indeed." "They would be, I'm sure," said Sir Henry. "The sergeant, I think it was a sergeant, or it may have been an inspector, gave her a chair and explained things, and of course I saw at once that it was some mistake." "Ah," thought Sir Henry, "aye, here we are, I thought as much." "My friend said so," continued Jane, serenely unconscious of her self-betrayal. "She explained that she'd been rehearsing with her understudy at the hotel, and that she never even heard of this Mr. Faulkner, and the sergeant said, She stopped and flushed. "Miss Hellman," suggested Sir Henry with a twinkle. "Oh, yes, yes, that would do, thank you. He said, 'Well, Miss Hellman, I felt it must be some mistake, knowing that you were stopping at the Bridge Hotel. And he said, 'Would I have any objection to confronting?' Or was it being confronted? I can't remember." "Doesn't matter," said Sir Henry reassuringly. "Anyway, with a young man. So I said, 'Of course not.' And they brought him in and said, 'This is Miss Hellier.' And..." "Oh," Jane broke off, open-mouthed. "Never mind, my dear," said Miss Marple consolingly. "We were bound to guess, you know. And you haven't given us the name of the place or anything that really matters." "Well," said Jane, "I did mean to tell it as though it happened to someone else, but it is difficult, isn't it? I mean, one forgets so." Everyone assured her that it was very difficult. And soothed and reassured, she went on with her slightly involved narrative. "He was a nice-looking man. Quite a nice-looking man, young, with reddish hair, and his mouth just opened when he saw me, and the sergeant said, 'Is this the lady?' And he said, 'No, indeed it isn't. What an ass I've been.' And I smiled at him and said it didn't matter." "All about, dear," said Miss Marple, so mildly that no one could suspect her of irony. "I mean, what the young man's mistake was, and about the burglary." "Oh, yes," said Jane. "Well, you see, this young man, Leslie Faulkner, his name was, had written a play. He'd written several plays, as a matter of fact, though none of them had ever been taken, and he had sent this particular play to me to read. I didn't know about it, because, of course, I have hundreds of plays sent to me, and I read very few of them myself, only the ones I know something about. Anyway, there it was, and it seems that Mr. Faulkner got a letter from me, and it turned out not to be really from me. You understand?" She paused anxiously, and they assured her they understood. "Saying that I'd read the play and liked it very much, and would he come down and talk it over with me? And it gave the address, the bungalow, Riverbury. So Mr. Faulkner was frightfully pleased, and he came down and arrived at this place, the bungalow. A parlour maid opened the door, and he asked for Miss Hellier, and she said Miss Hellier was in and expecting him, and showed him into the drawing-room. And there a woman came to him, and he accepted her as me, as a matter of course. It seems queer, because after all he had seen me act, my photographs are very well known, aren't they? Over the length and breadth of England, said Mrs. Bantry promptly, but there's often a lot of difference between a photograph and its original, my dear Jane, and there's a great deal of difference between behind the footlights and off the stage. It's not every actress who stands the test as well as you do, remember. Well, said Jane, slightly mollified, that may be so. Anyway, he described this woman as tall and fair, with big blue eyes and very good-looking, so I suppose it must have been near enough. He certainly had no suspicions. She sat down and began talking about his play, and said she was anxious to do it. Whilst they were talking, cocktails were brought in, and Mr. Faulkner had one as a matter of course. Well, that's all he remembers, having his cocktail. When he woke up or came to himself, or whatever you call it, he was lying out in the road, by the hedge, of course, so that there would be no danger of his being run over. He felt very queer and shaky. So much so that he just got up and staggered along the road, not quite knowing where he was going. He said if he'd had his senses about him, he'd have gone back to the bungalow and tried to find out what had happened, but he just felt stupid and mazed and walked along without quite knowing what he was doing. He was just more or less coming to himself when the police arrested him. Why did the police arrest him? Asked Dr. Lloyd. Oh, didn't I tell you? Said Jane, opening her eyes very wide. Oh, how very stupid I am. The burglary. You mentioned a burglary, but you didn't say where or what or why, said Mrs. Bantry. Well, this bungalow, the one he went to, of course, it wasn't mine at all. It belonged to a man whose name was... Again Jane furrowed her brows. Do you want me to be godfather again? Asked Sir Henry. Pseudonym supplied free of charge. Describe the tenant and I'll do the naming. It was taken by a rich city man, a knight.
Sir Herman Cohen, suggested Sir Henry.
Oh, that will do beautifully. He took it for a lady. She was the wife of an actor, and she was also an actress herself.
We'll call the actor Claude Leeson, said Sir Henry, and the lady would be known by her stage name, I suppose, so we'll call her Miss Mary Carr.
I think you're awfully clever, said Jane. I don't know how you think of these things so easily. Well, you see, this was sort of a weekend con. Actress woman, a good deal of jewellery, including some very fine emeralds.
Ah, said Dr. Lloyd, now we're getting at it.
This jewellery was at the bungalow, just locked up in a jewel case. The police said it was very careless. Anyone might have taken it.
You see, Dolly, said Colonel Bantry, what do I always tell you?
Well, in my experience, said Mrs. Bantry, it's always the people who are so dreadfully careful who lose things. I don't lock mine up in a jewel case. I keep it in a drawer loose under my stockings. I dare say if, what's her name, Mary Carr, done the same thing, it would never have been stolen.
It would, said Jane, because all the drawers are burst open and the contents strewn about.
But they weren't really looking for jewels, said Mrs. Bantry. They were looking for secret papers. That's what always happens in books.
I don't know about secret papers, said Jane doubtfully. I never heard of any.
Don't be distracted, Miss Hellier, said Colonel Bantry. Dolly's wild red herrings are not to be taken seriously.
About the burglary, said Sir Henry.
Yes, well, the police were rung up by someone who said that she was Miss Mary Carr. She said the bungalow had been burgled and described a young man with red hair who'd called there that morning. Her maid had thought there was something odd about him and had refused him admittance, but later they'd seen him getting out through a window. She described the man so accurately that the police arrested him only an hour later, and then he told his story and showed them the letter from me. And as I told you, they fetched me, and when he saw me, he said what I told you, that it hadn't been me at all.
A very curious story, said Dr. Lloyd. Did Mr. Faulkner know this, Miss Carr?
No, he didn't.
Or said he didn't.
But I haven't told you the most curious part yet. The police went to the bungalow, of course, and they found everything as described. Drawers pulled out and jewels gone, but the whole place was empty. It wasn't till some hours later that Mary Carr came back, and when she did, she said she'd never rung them up at all, and this was the first she'd heard of it. It seemed that she had had a wire that morning from a manager offering her a most important part and making an appointment, so she'd naturally rushed up to town to keep it. When she got there, she found that the whole thing was a hoax. No telegram had ever been sent.
A common enough ruse to get her out of the way, commented Sir Henry. What about the servants? The same sort of thing happened there. There was only one. She was rung up on the telephone, apparently by Mary Carr, who said she left a most important thing behind. She directed the maid to bring up a certain handbag which was in the drawer of her bedroom. She was to catch the first train. The maid did so, of course, locking up the house. But when she arrived at Miss Carr's club, where she'd been told to meet her mistress, she waited there in vain. Said Sir Henry, I begin to see. The house was left empty, and to make an entry by one of the windows would present few difficulties, I should imagine. But I don't quite see where this Mr. Faulkner comes in. Who did ring up the police if it wasn't Miss Carr? That's what nobody knew or ever found out. Curious, said Sir Henry. Did the young man turn out to be genuinely the person he said he was? Oh, yes, that part of it was all right. He'd even got the letter, which was supposed to be written by me. It wasn't the least bit like my handwriting. But then, of course, he couldn't be supposed to know that. Well, let's take the position clearly, said Sir Henry. Correct me if I go wrong. The lady and the maid are decoyed from the house. The young man is decoyed down there by means of a bogus letter, colour being lent to this last by the fact that you actually are performing at Riverbury that week. The young man, were they ever recovered? No, never, I think, as a matter of fact. Sir Herman tried to hush things up, all he knew how, but he couldn't manage it. And I rather fancy his wife started to hadn't really got enough against him. Don't you think the whole thing was rather odd? Distinctly odd. The first question is whose story to believe? In telling it, Miss Hellyer, I notice that you incline towards believing Mr. Faulkner. Have you any reason for doing so, beyond your own instinct in the matter? No, said Jane unwillingly, I suppose I haven't. But he was so very nice and so apologetic for having mistaken anyone else for me, that I feel sure he must mean telling the truth. I see, said Sir Henry, smiling, but you must admit that he could have invented the story quite easily. He could write the letter purporting to be from you himself. He could also dope himself after successfully committing the burglary. But I confess I don't see where the point of all that would be. Easier to enter the house, help himself, and disappear quietly, unless just possibly he was observed by someone in the neighbourhood, and knew himself to have been observed. Then he might hastily concoct this plan for diverting suspicion from himself and accounting for his presence in the neighbourhood. Seems curious, said Dr. Lloyd. I must confess that if we accept the young man's story as true, it seems to make the case much more difficult. Why should the unknown woman who pretended to be Miss Hellyer drag this unknown man into the affair? Why should she stage such an elaborate comedy? Tell me, Jane, said Mrs. Bantry, did young Faulkner ever come face to face with Mary Carr at any stage of the proceedings? I don't quite know, said Jane slowly as she puzzled her brows in remembrance. Because if he didn't, the case is solved, said Mrs. Bantry. I'm sure I'm right. What is easier than to pretend you're called up to town? You telephone to your maid from Paddington, or whatever station you arrive at, and as she comes up to town, you go down again. The young man calls by appointment. He's doped. You set the stage for the burglary, overdoing it as much as possible. You telephone the police, giving a description of your scapegoat, and off you go to town again. Anyway, I can think of hundreds of reasons. She may have wanted money at once. Old Sir Herman wouldn't give her cash, perhaps, so she pretends the jewels are stolen and then sells them secretly. Or she may have been being blackmailed by someone who threatened to tell her husband or Sir Herman's wife. Or she may have already sold the jewels, and Sir Herman was getting ratty and asking to see them, so she had to do something about it. That's done a good deal in books. Or perhaps she was going to have them reset, and she'd got paste replicas. Or, now here's a very good idea, and not so much done in books. She pretends they're stolen, gets in an awful state, he gives her a fresh lot, so she gets two lots instead of one. That kind of woman, I'm sure, is most frightfully artful. You are clever, Dolly, said Jane admiringly. I never thought of that. You may be clever, but she doesn't say you're right, said Colonel Bantry. I incline to suspicion of the city gentleman. He'd know the sort of telegram to get the lady out of the way, and he could manage the rest easily enough with the help of a new lady friend. Nobody's... My dear, I really don't know what to say. Sir Henry will laugh, but I recall no village parallel to help me this time. course, there are several questions that suggest themselves. For instance, the servant question. In, well, an irregular menage of the kind you describe, the servant employed would doubtless be perfectly aware of the state of things, and a really nice girl would not take such a place. Her mother wouldn't let her for a minute. So I think we can assume that the maid was not a really trustworthy character. She may have been in league with the thieves. She would leave the house open for them and actually go to London, as though sure of the pretense telephone message, so as to divert suspicion from herself. I must confess that that seems the most probable solution. Only if ordinary thieves were concerned, it seems very odd. It seems to argue more knowledge than the maidservant's personal feeling about the whole thing. Supposing somebody had a spite, for instance. Don't you think that that would explain things better, and a deliberate attempt? Why, Doctor, you haven't said anything, said Jane. I'd forgotten you. I'm always getting forgotten, said the grizzled doctor sadly. I must have a very inconspicuous personality. Oh, no, said Jane. Do tell us what you think. I'm rather in the position of agreeing with everyone's solutions, and yet with none of them. I myself have a far-fetched and probably totally erroneous theory that the wife may have had something to do with it. Sir Herman's wife, I mean. I've no grounds for thinking so, only you would be surprised if you knew the extraordinary things that a wronged wife will take it into her head to do. Oh, Dr. Lloyd, cried Miss Marple excitedly, how clever of you, and I never thought of poor Mrs. Pebmarsh. Jane stared at her. Mrs. Pebmarsh? Who is Mrs. Pebmarsh? Well, Miss Marple hesitated, I don't know that she really comes in. She's a laundress, and she stole an opal pin that was pinned into a blouse and put it in another woman's house. Jane looked more fogged than ever. And that makes it all perfectly clear to you, Miss Marple, said Sir Henry with a twinkle. But to his surprise, Miss Marple shook her head. No, no, I'm afraid it doesn't. I must confess myself completely at a loss. What I do realize is that women must stick together. One should, in an emergency, stand by one's own sex. I think that's the moral of the story Miss Hellyer has told us. I must confess that that particular ethical significance of the mystery has escaped me, said Sir Henry gravely. Perhaps I shall see the significance of your point more clearly when Miss Hellyer has revealed the solution. Eh, said Jane, looking rather bewildered. I was observing that in childish language we give it up. You and you alone, Miss Hellyer, have had the high honour of presenting such an absolutely baffling mystery that even Miss Marple has to confess herself defeated. Self-spokesman once more. That is to say, we stand or fall by the sketchy solutions we have tentatively advanced. One each for the mere men, two for Miss Marple, and a round dozen for Mrs. B. It was not a dozen, said Mrs. Bantry. They were variations on a main theme. And how often am I to tell you that I will not be called Mrs. B? So you all give up, said Jane thoughtfully. That's very interesting. She leant back in her chair and began to polish her nails rather absent-mindedly. Everybody harboured feelings of annoyance. It was all very well for Jane to be so beautiful, but at the moment everyone felt that stupidity could be carried too far. Even the most transcendent time, said Colonel Bantry, words failing him. You are the most aggravating girl, Jane, said his wife. Anyway, I'm sure on all Shelby that I was right. If you just tell us the proper names of all... Course she could, said Mrs. Bantry. Don't be so high-minded, Jane. We older folks must have a bit of scandal. At any rate, tell us who the city magnate was. But Jane shook her head, and Miss Marple, in her old-fashioned way, continued to support the girl. It must have been a very distressing business, she said. No, said Jane truthfully, I think I rather enjoyed it. Well, perhaps you did, said Miss Marple. I suppose it was a break in the monotony. What play were you acting in? Smith, you asked Mrs. Bantry. Jane nodded. Well, said Miss Marple, rising, I must go home. Such late hours. But we've had a very entertaining evening. Most of you gave us a very pretty problem to sharpen our wits upon. I'm only sorry we none of us could solve it convincingly. Speak for yourself, said Mrs. Bantry. I did solve it. I'm convinced I'm right, Sir Henry, teasingly. Dr. Lloyd gallantly assisted Miss Marple to put on her galoshes. Just in case, as the old lady explained. The doctor was to be her escort to her old world cottage. Wrapped in several woolen shawls, Miss Marple wished everyone good night once more. She came to Jane Hellyer last, and leaning forward, bowing and nodding, Miss Marple made her exit. Jane Hellyer stared after her. "Are you coming to bed, Jane?" asked Mrs. Bantry. "What's the matter with you? You're staring as though you'd seen—" Mrs. Bantry came into the girl's room with her. "Your fire's nearly out," said Mrs. Bantry, giving it a vicious and ineffectual poke. "They can't have made it up properly. How stupid housemaids are still." "The maxim, yes, perhaps it is, but I don't see the application." "I suppose you can't ever really trust a woman, and I should be in her power. I never thought of that. Weekends with him at the bungalow I told you about. I wanted her shown up. I'd like everyone to know the sort of woman she was, and you see, with a burglary everything would be bad. I wear parlourmaid's kit in it, you know, so I should have it handy. And when they sent for me to the police station, it's the easiest thing in the world. Say I was rehearsing my part of my understudy at the hotel. Really, of course, we would be at the bungalow. I just have to open the door and bring in the cocktails, and Netta to pretend to be me. He'd never see her again, of course, so there would be no fear of his recognizing her. And I can make myself look quite different as a parlourmaid, and besides, one doesn't look at parlourmaids as though they were people. We plan to drag him out into the road afterwards, bag the jewel case, telephone the police, and get back to the hotel. I shouldn't like the poor young man to suffer, but Sir Henry didn't seem—" "Oh, my poor head, and all the time—" "Jane Hellyer, you deceitful girl, telling us that story the way you did." "I am a good actress," said Jane complacently. "I always have Bantry." Jane sighed again. "Oh, well, still one had better not risk it, and of course I should be in Netta's power, that's true enough. She might turn against me or blackmail me or anything. She helped me think out the details, and she professed to be devoted to me, but one never does know with women. No, I think Miss Marple's right. None of this has happened yet. I was, well, trying it on the dog, so to speak." "I don't profess to understand your theatrical slang," said Mrs. Bantry with dignity.